brothers and sisters, it's Kyle, hosting your favorite host of Coffee and Vinyl, and I'm hoping y'all are having a great day. Today we are going to have some rock and roll fun, and we are going to be covering a band that I had the opportunity to see a couple months back with some good friends out there in the Buffalo area. A little shout out to Mr. Nykel and Mr. Breeze. Thanks for going with me to the show. It was a really damn fun time. And we are covering a band that is not quite as old as the ones I've been covering lately. We are covering Clutch. And the album we are covering by them is Psychic Warfare. Probably, I wouldn't say it's my favorite. No, it's my favorite. It's just one of those, I have a thing for concept-y albums and ones that have songs and so forth that kind of all link together or somewhat link together. It's kind of one of my things, and I definitely got to say this is very concept-y. I wouldn't consider it a full-on concept album like The Wall or The Who's Tommy, but there are definitely some interlinking ideas within the structure of the album, and it's a really good album. Before we get started and go too far, let me give you a little bit of a background that I was able to find out about these guys, because they are a newer band, and I was not on the Clutch bandwagon from the get-go. I kind of got into them a little bit late, but they're from Germantown, Maryland. Started around 1991, and excuse me. The members are Tim Sult on lead guitar, Dan Maines on bass, Jean-Paul Gaster on drums, and Neil Fallon, who is the vocal stylist, the rhythm guitar player, and he also does keyboards. Back in, or early in their run, Neil replaced their original lead singer, Roger Smalls. Unfortunately, I was not able to find anything about him afterwards, so I don't know if he really did much of anything afterwards, at least not in the music business. I hope he's living his best life, and rock on, brother. This is their 11th studio album. Like I said, they've been around since 1991 as a band. And this here little record, as it were, was dropped on October 2nd, 2015. And it was actually, I wouldn't have realized this. Got up to number 11 on the Billboard Top 200 and on both of their Billboard's Hard Rock and Top Rock little charts there. This album reached up to number 1. So, hey, that just goes to show you, after a little perseverance or whatever, even smaller time, lesser known bands can make a big impact. And, you know, kind of unfortunately, these guys are a little bit lesser known. I guess you could classify them as stoner rock. That's what all the apps and whatnot call them. I just call them good old rock and roll. I know at the very beginning of their career, they started out kind of more of a hardcore band. Very screamy vocals from time to time. But as time has gone on, they have definitely entered into the world of weird, or of well, you'll see how he sounds now. Could have been an old school blues artist back in the day, back in the 20s and 30s. He could have pulled off a blues artist and done very well. Neil could. So, what little bit I do know about the background of this album is I know some of it had to do, or was, not had to do, but was inspired by Philip K. Dick. Those of you who out there who don't know who Philip K. Dick is, he was a prolific science fiction writer. Wrote probably his most infamous novel was the I hate it when I have a brain fart. Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, or better known to most of us as Blade Runner. He also wrote Ubik and The Man in the High Castle, A Scanner Darkly. He had a plethora of films made about his books. Obviously, like I said, Blade Runner and A Scanner Darkly, which also was another good flick out there. Minority Report was based on a short story. So was that little flick out there with what's his name, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Right. What was that called? Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sharon Stone and that little flick called Total Recall. Yeah. So anyway, as I said, this album was influenced most definitely. Not the album all in total, but at least the first couple of tunes written were definitely inspired by the paranoid writings of Philip K. Dick. And Neil Fallon says that in several interviews. So here's what we're going to do. I'm actually going to play through the entire first track because it's short and spoken word, and then I'll play my normal, you know, however long clip of the second track on the album called X-Ray Visions. Track number one is called The Affidavit, and you'll kind of understand why. The second one is X-Ray Visions, and that one is the one that is definitely heavily influenced by Philip K. Dick, but it's a really great song. It rocks all the way through. This entire album pretty much rocks all the way through. So here we go. Let's give it a bit of a peruse and a listen, as it were. So Morse code. So yeah, can you tell a little bit in the way of paranoia and definite X-Files-y kind of vibe to it? Guy stuck in a hotel room, running from something, he's not sure what, and getting kind of taken over by his own paranoia and inability to see past it, I guess, really. I mean, he is being chased by some nefarious folk, but there's also some weird gaga going on in the melon there. Our next track is definitely one of the ones that I dig the most off of this one, and really was very happy that the boys played this live. It was supposed to be kind of a 30-year retrospective when we went to see them, considering they had been around that long at that point. And this was one of the ones that they opened with, and it made me so happy because I was not as familiar with some of the older stuff. I knew it, but I was not, like, it was not ingrained in my head. And this was one of the ones that they kind of, I want to say they played it second or third during the set, and it just kind of really made me groove into everything and just really get into the vibe of it all. And you'll see why. And the story's kind of fun about him, this main character dude, at least at this point, at least through the first 2-3 songs, meeting up with this weirdo chick that wants a Firebird and energy weapons, like badass bitch, right? And he can't quite get there because, well, all he has is a Datsun 170. So, anyway, let's play through this one here and see what y'all think, because I'm trying to kind of get y'all into these guys because they're definitely worth a listen. Come on, son. That's so funny. So, I guess in the midst of writing this song, a couple of the guys in the crew were from Southern California. And as he was writing this song, I guess he was just gibbering with the guys. And he's like, so what is the grittiest and nastiest place that's just scary in Southern California, since that's what he was trying to kind of go for? I mean, he mentions the Needles, which is right on the border of Nevada and Southern California. And all three of them, I guess, in unison, without breaking a sweat, nothing, said Barstow. And I'm just like, that is just so funny to me, because I am a Southern California kid. And Barstow is just that, nitty gritty, out in the middle of the goddamn desert. Dirty, nefarious sounding, just nefarious people from what I understand. And I guess it's still that way. But, and on top of that, there's another kind of writer, maybe not an influence per se, but there's a little nod to another writer who chronicled that one when in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas by Hunter S. Thompson, just outside of Barstow, is when the drugs started kicking in. I mean, you know, so I thought that was a neat little unintentional homage, and the song just kind of kicks ass. I'm going to say that about most of these tracks. They all just kick ass, keep rocking, keep you going. You want to hear more. And the next track is no different. This one was a little bit differently influenced. It really veers away slightly from the initial first 3-song narrative there about this weird paranoid dude. And it's called A Quick Death in Texas. And I'm going to play you a little bit first, and then I'll jibber-jabber about it. And we'll go from there. So here's A Quick Death in Texas. Child with the local traditions. Austin, Texas. And, okay, so I wanted to jibber-jabber about this here track as well. I'm going to jibber-jabber about all the tracks, but this one I wanted to jibber-jabber about because all the guys in the band were very heavily influenced in their youth by ZZ Top. And this was actually the last song in the album that was recorded. And they were recording in Texas at the time. So they decided they wanted to give a little shout out to the boys in ZZ Top and, of course, Billy Gibbons. Therefore, there's the, you know, please forgive me, Mr. Gibbons line, which I just needed to play. Also found out that while they were there and doing the recording or whatever, Neil, I guess, found out that he is a East Coast suburbanite. He decided to be all like hoity-toity and Airbnb his stay while he was there, and he got stuck in an 1800 stone cabin built in the 1800s, and I guess woke up to roosters and chickens and horses outside his door every morning, and he was just like, yeah, this is just not my bag. And apparently towards the end of his stay, one of the last nights he was there, he drove up to the place, and in front of the front door of this cabin was the beginnings of a makeshift teepee, and he spent the night sitting outside his porch with a shitty rusty-ass knife, thinking that some local jerk-off was coming to fuck with the new guy, with the outsider on the property. But actually what it was the owners of the property who lived in a home across the valley were starting a build of a teepee for their young grandchildren that were coming to visit later during that weekend after Neil left the premises, but scared the ever-living shit out of him, apparently. And that's when he kind of realized, oh, well, I'm definitely a East Coast suburbanite. This is so not my bag. This is so not for me. And I just thought that was really funny. Next song we got coming up is Sucker for the Witch. Another track that they did play live made me very, very much smile. And it just talks about dude falling for the wrong girl, and the wrong girl is that beautiful, long-haired, blonde girl that dresses in the flowing Stevie Nicks type stuff. I mean, he even references her as the Stevie Nicks type, and it's just a cool little love gone wrong kind of song that just rocks out and makes you want to bang your head and, yeah, just makes you want to do that. So here is Sucker for the Witch. And I pleaded like a fiend for a fix. Dig it. Love it. Love, love, love it. And rocked my ass off out to it while I was there listening to that shit live. saw them at the Town Ballroom in Buffalo, New York. And if you've never been, definitely recommend going to see a show there. The acoustics were great. The sound was amazing. Really, really, really small little venue. There was probably 500 of us in this little venue. That, I mean, if I really wanted to, I could have gone right up to the stage and had the boys sweat on me. But it's also lofted, or not lofted. There's an upper kind of balcony above the lower arena area, I guess is the best way to call it, because it used to be an old theater, and where the lower seats are on the floor, and then right up above that, there's two small lifted balcony area type things, and my friends and I were on the second balcony area, and it was perfect line of sight right across the heads of everybody on the floor onto the stage. We weren't too far away, got to see all the action. The sound, like I said, was great. So you ever get a chance to go to see anybody at the Town Ballroom, take advantage. Anyway, done plugging for them. Next song is Your Love Is Incarceration, another one that's kind of a Love Gone Bad kind of tune. Just another rocker. Like I said, most of the songs on this. And I think you guys should give it a peruse. Check it out. See what you think, what you like. If you don't, you might be wrong. Not dig that opening riff. That opening riff by Tim Sult and Dan Means on guitar and bass are just friggin' awesome. Just, I don't know, just awesome. Deal with it. That's how I feel. Next one up is actually called Doom Saloon. It is an instrumental, and I was unaware of the fact that the boys here, I know they had done some side projects. Neil especially has done some. He was in the Company Band with a bunch of the guys from CKY. That's actually how I first got introduced to them. I came across that album kind of randomly, just searching stuff. I don't even know how I came across it. This was easily 10 years ago. And I heard Neil's voice, and I was like, oh, I like that voice, but I know I've heard that before. And that's how I kind of backtracked into starting to listen to Clutch and things like that, because I had heard a couple of tunes by them back then. And anyway, so I know these guys have a side project that they do that is all instrumental stuff, and it is called The Bakerton Group. They've only got one album out, but it's really cool, kind of. It's Clutch without any vocals, so I really dig it. I think it's pretty goddamn cool. Listened to a little bit of it last night, and yeah, we will be listening to some more. But Doom Saloon is also the name of their most recent live broadcasts that they have done, that they have turned into LPs. So this is technically side two, track one on side two, or track seven of the vinyl, which I will be posting pictures on Instagram. I do officially own it. I have a couple of albums by Clutch on vinyl. This is not one of those. I'm veering off my promise to you all that this would be a, I'm only going to play what I own. The only reason I veered a little bit last episode was because it was a tribute to Neil, and it was just one I really felt I needed to do. And I do own most of the albums that I play tracks off of, with the exception of two or three. So I'm sorry if I went off the rails there a little bit, but I thought Neil needed a little tribute. And I will probably end up doing a tribute to him and a couple of other folks around the anniversary of their passings regularly. So, but I am going to try very, very hard to stick to stuff that I own. So here, that all being said, here is the instrumental off of Psychic Warfare called Doom Saloon. It just gives you that feel of going into an old dusty saloon back in the mid to late 1800s in the wild, wild west, man. For sure, it gives you that feeling like, oh boy, what am I doing? Have I made the wrong decision? And if you're going into a place called the Doom Saloon, pretty sure you have. But that's okay, because once you enter into the Doom Saloon, you might get lucky and run into Our Lady of Electric Light, which is the next track. Track number 8 on Psychic Warfare. Our Lady of Electric Light. Sad sounding. I guess I've always, not always, I've tried to kind of reconcile what I like about Neil's voice, and I think what draws me to it is that it sounds an awful lot like if a white dude tried to do Howlin' Wolf. And I gotta say, Neil pulls it off pretty well. And he actually kind of pulls off the look, too, with the beard and everything. Pulls off the whole idea of being that dastardly character, the Howlin' Wolf. Now, we know the real guy, Howlin' Wolf, was not a dastardly character, but he kind of got into it while he was performing, that he was the slinky, nasty, dirty wolf out there in sheep's clothing, I guess. So, and I think Neil pulls it off for a... So, an East Coast suburbanite kid. He pulls it off pretty well, gotta say. The next track coming up is Noble Savage, and I kind of got a different feel personally from this song, but when I heard Neil explain what the song was really kind of about, it's turned my idea of it kind of on its head, and I can reconcile both things that I was feeling from it originally because of where it was placed on the album, right after Doom Saloon, which had that weird, you know, old-timey kind of feel, like you were walking into a dirty old dusty saloon, and then Our Lady of Electric Light going into that even further. I kind of was given the mental impression of him being just that, a noble savage, a noble Native American type. But really, that's not what this song is about. Because he's someone in the rock and roll business, and he's not a huge star. He's not Eddie Vedder. He's not, Chris Cornell. He's not someone of real name value to anyone but who the band is, the circles the band travels in. So he's not like wicked rich. So when he goes into places to try to get like a bank loan or to get his freaking driver's license or whatever, they give him the side eye because he looks like a fucking rock and roll bum. And it was kind of, he considers himself a noble savage within the idea that, yeah, I'm a rock and roll guy, but I still have the responsibilities of a normal human being. Don't screw me over because I look a little different, or my job description is not I work at a bank or I work at a grocery store or whatever. I don't do the normal 9-to-5 stuff. I travel on a bus and entertain people. But being the noble savage... Anyway, I get what he was trying to get at and what he was saying now, even more than what I was initially positing on the song. I'm sure I will come across a lot of these hiccups as time goes on and we do these recordings even further. I have never been someone that focuses on the lyrics like some people do. Some people absolutely love the poetry lyrics of certain artists that I can't get into. And it's not because I can't get into the words and the writing, but the aesthetic behind the song has always captured me first. The way the music is played, the feel the music in and of itself gives you, and then the feel of the lyrics. And yes, I know the lyrics because I can sing along to most of the songs that I love and adore. But it doesn't always mean that the lyrics register with me first. The music is always registered with me first. And then the importance that, you know, these people wrote those lyrics, or someone wrote them for them and they were great and they were sang passionately and there was something meaningful behind it. Yes, the deeper meanings of the lyrics haven't started resonating with me until I've gotten quite a bit older. So sometimes I'm going to think about what a song really means, the real deep meaning behind the lyrics. But I'm trying, and it's a learning process, so let's just all take this adventure together. And that all being said, now I'm going to stop jabbering and play a little bit of Noble Savage. unapologetic lifer for rock and roll. Guess that kind of describes me, too. I may not be the rock and roller, but I am the unapologetic professional lover of it. So, there we go. I'm an unapologetic lifer of rock and roll. That's me. Next up, we have Behold the Colossus, which is a groovy little tune about the gods and demons that we thought were gone. And no, they're just lying in wait. They're dormant. They are gorgons. They are monsters. And they're still here. They're still here. That just harkens back to the old days of Iron Maiden writing about evil shit. Dio and rawr. And next one coming up is Decapitation Blues. And again, this is another one of those tunes that I honestly didn't really pay close attention to at all, the lyrics. But from the horse's mouth, Mr. Neil Fallon, lead singer and rhythm guitar player and keyboardist for the band, and songwriter, this song actually has to do with the fact that a few years back, he had the vertebrae in his neck fused from basically doing damage, doing the one thing that us rock and roll guys love to do, banging our heads to the friggin' awesome songs that we listen to every day. And it's kind of a cautionary tale, yet at the same time, I guess it's also this weird thought that he had in his head, because when they did the fuse, first of all, he's no longer really supposed to be banging his head like an idiot, like, you know, the rest of us fools. And when they did the fuse, they didn't do it with just plastics and things like that. They used the bones of dead people. they used cadaver bones and shaved them down and inserted them and things like that. So we would have a little bit of movement. And it was his thought process of, okay, so that's really cool that they can do that, not just for, you know, my neck, but for other parts of the body and so forth. They can use cadaver bones and tissue and things like that to help the living. And what if the persona, kind of like in some of those old horror flicks, came back and kind of took over? That woo-woo, old-schooly shit that the spirit still lives within the pieces of the body. So that's what this song kind of deals with in his way. It's called Decapitation Blues because, unfortunately, you know, could do some major damage to himself if he continued being a major headbanger nowadays.
Hear you, the kid did not.
so dark, but still rocks. Yeah, that song still rocks. Love that song. Next track coming up is the final track on the album, track 12, Son of Virginia. And not exactly sure what to have described this song, so I don't think I'm even going to try. This is the one that really kind of reminded me of a Howling Wolf sound or whatever that I was alluding to earlier. And the lyrics are just weird and wonderful, and just take a listen. I think y'all will dig. This is Son of Virginia, the final track on Psychic Warfare by Clutch. Stuff right there. That is the final track off of Psychic Warfare. Now, I do say that's the final track, but they're actually kind of, it's not a hidden track. It's the end of Son of Virginia is actually the final, what I consider the final track, because it's the end of the Affidavit, which bookends the album as a whole. So I will be playing that here very shortly, just to play the end of that whole spoken word thing at the beginning of the song, or at the beginning of the album. This is definitely one of my faves by these guys. It's not the end all be all, because they are still out there making music. The next couple of weeks here on the show, I'm going to try to focus on some newer bands, not try to keep us so far back in time that everybody's like, oh, well, that's all he listens to. He's an old man, blah, blah, blah. I still try to listen to a lot of new stuff. And there's some guys out there on the horizon that I will hopefully be picking up some vinyl from, and some that I already have some from. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I will be sitting down and listening to, with you guys, some Dirty Honey. Great band out of LA. Really dig them. They got a great sound. Very reminiscent of kind of crossing the Black Crowes with Guns N' Roses. Greta Van Fleet. I know a lot of people have their issues with them because they think they're Led Zeppelin 2.0 and not as good. But I like them a lot. And I think on their second full-length release, they've proven that they are more than just a clone from the 70s. Rival Sons will be another one that we will probably delve into soon. Just trying to keep it that we're not stuck in one particular spot. And I will be also throwing some new country in there as well. Any of you guys in there out there into Sturgill Simpson or Chris Stapleton, Tyler Childers, some of the new outlaw country kind of guys will be talking about them too. So have no fear. Kyle is not a one-trick pony when it comes to the kind of music he likes. Once again, I also want to give a huge shout-out to John Kandelan, and I think you guys should go check out his Instagram, Espresso Your Art. He is the gentleman that was kind enough to design my new logo. The updated digital version of the old logo. He did a tremendous job, and his artwork is absolutely fantastic. And also, if any of you guys out there have any artwork that you would like to see me do for you, I would be more than happy to provide those services. Also, this week, please do me the favor and take a listen to the ad for Anchor that I did at the beginning of each of these shows. Don't skip over it. It helps finance this little venture for me. So I would love to start getting paid to do this well. And also, before we close out with the final part of the affidavit, I also want to say that you guys all rock. You have shown me so much support. I know I've posted this on Facebook, but I just wanted to say it out loud. You guys are awesome. Every single one of you that has taken the time out to even listen to me for 5 minutes has made my day. I see the reports on my analytics. Much love to all of you, brothers and sisters. You guys have just made this guy very happy, and even if I don't ever end up getting paid for this, I hope you guys still listen and let me take you to my version of school as often as I possibly can. And yeah, so in closing this week's episode, I'm going to play you out with the final portion of Psychic Warfare by Clutch.
Forgive me if I appear to be somewhat vexed by your statement. However, if that's the way you recall it happening, you can go ahead and put your name there at the bottom. And thank you for your time. You have a good night now.